Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 on our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here is the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 226 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is June 26, 2012. We've got a great show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast. We want to get to a lot of your questions, and you have a bunch of them sent in this week. If you'd like to send some more, you want to guess questions on the show next week, podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can leave us a voicemail two different ways. Call 206-888-6755. Leave a voicemail there, or go right to peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page to leave a voice message, and we will play it on the podcast and hopefully answer the question for you. All right, here we go. We got Coach Harvey Hyde coming up in the first segment. He's going to be joining us talking about the USC Trojan football team. We've got some questions for him. He's going to talk about some of the recent USC commits and what he thinks is going to happen with the signing day class. We also have Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer, coming on later on in the show. We got some questions for him from USC summer workouts and college football playoff, things like that. And as I said, Coach Harvey Hyde joins us first, so he's on the line right now, back from secret assignment. We missed you last week, Coach. What's going on?
Well, Ryan, I tell you, sometimes you have to go undercover. And I went undercover last week while you were out of town, and got some secret information that I'll share with everybody later on. Maybe it might not be this show, but I want people to keep listening. So if I give it all away this show, they won't keep listening. So Ryan will just give a little bit out each time. But hey, welcome back from Atlanta. You have been doing a lot of traveling and watching a lot of great football players compete. I'm anxious to hear everything you have to say here during the week with all of your podcasts and articles and so on. But let's get started. Let's talk about football.
That sounds good, Coach. And before we jump into it, just wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. You can go to sctickets.com. If you need tickets for anything, give them a call, 1-800-888-7287. Not just sports. You can go to the theater. You can go to concerts, things like that. So check them out. They've been great to us. And feel free to give them your business. They'll definitely help you out with any kind of tickets you need. Just ask for Curtis. And, Coach, yeah, I just got back from Atlanta for the Rivals 100 five-star challenge, where they invite 100 of the top high school prospects in the country. It was the first year they were doing a camp like this, an exclusive camp for just Rivals.com to cover. And I wasn't sure, Coach, at first, but, man, they got so much talent, a huge chunk of the Rivals 100, and then they got a bunch of top 2014 players to come in as well. So a lot of five-star guys. USC had by far the most commitments at the game, 8 commitments. It became 8 when Sebastian LaRue, or Gerard Martinez, broke that news over while we were in Atlanta. Sebastian LaRue, the 4-star wide receiver from Santa Monica, he committed to the Trojans. I was actually on the flight back with him, Coach, when we from Atlanta to Los Angeles last night. So I shared a flight with him, chatted with him for a while. Really cool kid. A lot of really good personalities and good people in this class besides being good football players. But it was pretty amazing, Coach, having 8 commitments there. Every other publisher I talked to, they'd be like, oh, the school I cover has 1, or the school I cover has 2, or none but a few targets. And they're like, how many USC commits here? I'm like, 8. So it was a whole bunch.
Well, it's going the right way, because it all comes down to players, and players are what make great coaches. And when you have a lot of great players in one area, you build that team pride and that unity that will carry over and be a great Trojan at USC or whatever university that has that type of recruiting class. You know, I asked you a question before we went on the air, and I think a lot of people, I'm going to ask you a question for once, okay? I asked you a question, how do these kids get there? How do they afford to get there? And maybe you've told all our listeners this, but I was really confused, because some kids have to travel so far that I said, how can they afford it? And you answered that. Why don't you answer that for everybody else who might want to know what that answer is?
Yeah, and so Rivals wasn't doing their own camps for a while, and then a couple of years ago they joined up with a company called VTO. And I think for those camps, I don't believe they have like a major sponsor yet. and you have to kind of pay your own way. But for this five-star challenge, they really wanted to blow it out and get, even though it was the first year, get the best players in the country, you know, to come out there from all the regions. They had the West, they had the Northeast, they had the Southeast, and the Southwest is the four regions they designated, and just got, you know, every, you know, they had five-star players from, you know, every region. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, so the players get free travel, free room and board, and everything to come out there. They get all the swag. So they had Under Armour was one of the sponsors, and players, I think they had like three different uniforms and all kinds of different, they had like coats and, I mean, jackets and stuff. They went to Six Flags after, you know, the first day at night, and, you know, all the meals and everything. So they really took care of these kids while they were out there. I think that was part of the reason that was such a big draw. And I think it was similar to what Nike was doing up at the opening in Oregon. If you want to have a really elite camp like that and get, you know, players from everywhere, I think you kind of have to do it. I mean, the regional camps are fine because people can travel locally, but if you want to have a national camp and get everyone to come, it seems like you're going to have to, you know, throw some extra stuff in there. And I know Yahoo had to work with the NCAA on what you can and what you can't do. So there was, you know, I have talked to one of Yahoo's legal representatives, and they were talking about everything that was going back and forth with the NCAA. So they had to definitely dot their I's and cross their T's. But in the end, the players got, you know, the travel and room and board and everything. So it didn't cost them anything. Now, parents, they weren't able to do as much. There's some, I guess there's limitations there. So parents came, but I think they had to kind of put that on their own dime. But for the players, it was great. I mean, they got all kinds of swag, and, you know, they got a free trip, and obviously they got to compete with, you know, some of the best competition, well, the best competition they've ever seen in their lives.
Well, that absolutely surprises me that the NCAA allows that, unless it's in their best interest for publicity for college football or whatever. But, you know, they always say you can't do anything for a student athlete that you don't do for a regular student, unless it benefits them. And nothing against the kids. I think it's a great opportunity for them to get out and display their skills and so on. But it's amazing how they can twist rules around and pay expenses and give sweats and do this and do that, do all these different things, and when they think it's okay. So that just shows you the hypocrisy of the NCAA and how it works. It's a combine. It's a tryout camp. And how does it benefit? Well, it benefits college football as far as publicity of college football and television and all the coverage that they have when they have signing day on ESPN and all these other different channels. And it's just part of all of the part of the financial side of what college football is going to, the determination of a bid on a national championship game. It's all coming down to dollars and cents. And I think it's great, but do these kids ever have any time off? Now, after being down there in Atlanta, they go to another camp this weekend, another camp the next weekend. I mean, there's a point of how long does it take you to evaluate a college football player? Doesn't take me long. I told you a long time ago who I thought were pretty good players, but it seems as though it's getting to be more of a financial type of venture and promotional venture for these kids and how they utilize these kids as far as getting publicity out there. And I'm not against it, but if one kid was to get hurt or one kid lost the opportunity of going to college, who's going to pay for his college education? I want to ask that. Well, they probably have insurance on all these kids. At least I hope they do. But there's a lot of, when does a kid have some time to be a kid? And I think that's important. Let's move on.
Yeah, and there's some kids. You know, Sue Al Cravens is a five-star safety that USC got. He decided he didn't want to camp this summer. So I think it's up to them if the kids want to do it. But I talked to a bunch of kids. They were East Coast kids even that were at the camp that were flying out to USC today, you know, the next day because – USC Rising Stars camp. Eldred Massington, the four-star receiver commit from Texas. You know, he had to fly back from Atlanta to Texas. I saw him in the airport. He's like, oh, I got to fly back, and then I got to get up at like 6 in the morning and fly to, you know, to L.A. And, I mean, some of these, I think Jalen Ramsey, the same kind of thing. He's a four-star corner from Nashville, Tennessee, was at the, you know, at the camp at Atlanta, which wasn't too far for him, but then he's flying out to Los Angeles the next day. So a lot of these kids like doing them. And then some don't really want to. I think it's really kind of up to them. If you're already a 4 and 5 star high ranked kid it's not really the exposure for you as much. A lot of the times, though, there's kids that are more sleepers, and they kind of move up the rankings, and you know, it just depends, though. But yeah, it's an interesting thing how this is happening. But for me, I personally like seeing a camp like this where everyone is elite. It's not like there's 500 kids and, you know, there's five that you think are really good. There's 100 kids and they're all really good. So if you're, it stands out, coach, if a kid isn't that good, you're like, wow, he's not that great. Where normally at a camp, he would be a superstar, but no, here you're with 100 of the best in the country, and it's hard to stand out. And if you do, it really means something.
All right. Since I'm interviewing you today, let me ask you another question. Who is the staff at this camp? Who are the coaches or the people that put these kids through these drills and make comments to them, positive comments or negative comments? Who are they and what are their credentials?
Yeah, so I didn't know a lot of them. The VTO is the company that they do a lot of different camp, regional camps and stuff. So I think they're the ones that brought in a lot of different coaches. I think a lot of people are high school coaches. I'm not sure if they're – I don't think there was any college coaches, but I think a lot of them are like – current high school coaches or former high school coaches, from what I understand, but I don't know too much about who the coaching staff is.
All right, just wanted to find out a little bit about the camp, and I think a lot of our listeners like to know where you were and what's going on with these camps. And all right, what do we got today for our questions?
Well, let's jump into some questions right now. Actually, first I wanted to talk to you real quick about the USC recruiting class, because, you know, as we mentioned, 8 commits were at this game. USC has 10 commits, so 80% of the committed players were at this high school all-star camp. So it means there's some talented guys in this class. But for USC, only having 18 scholarships to give, 15 because of sanctions, and then 3 rollovers from the previous class, I know you had some theories of what's going to happen with these last 8 commits, and even if the 10 that are on kind of stick around. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are this, Ryan. Once this starts to roll like it's rolling right now for USC with these commits, you find out who real players are, and you find out who really wants to compete, and they're not trying to hide from the competition that's at a university. You're getting the top players at your position. You're having an opportunity to play with the best players. And if you really want to be a Trojan, if you really want to go to USC, you better not wait too long to make up your mind that you want to go to USC, because there might not be a spot for you. Right now they have 3 receivers that have committed. They have a lot of great DBs that have committed. So if you want to be a Trojan, you know, you can't keep playing this game, because all of a sudden when you commit down the road, if you decide to commit after you want to go around and visit all these schools, and if you're not going there, I mean, I think it's a waste of time for you and a waste of time for the university to spend that time with you. Get it over with. Go and be happy at the school you want to go to so that you're not left out. So I think that you're going to start to see, at least I hope you're going to start to see, otherwise some players are going to be left out, people starting to commit earlier than what they were going to do. Because if they don't, there's liable to be somebody that comes up that's a superstar that maybe they already have enough DBs, but they can't turn down this DB like a Ramsey. So they're going to take him. They're going to take him, and then some other position is going to suffer from it. So there's offensive linemen out there that are waiting. You better just go ahead and do it. I understand Fala maybe gave a silent commit. You know, step out. Make your commitment. Be a part of this group. Enjoy the fraternity of living through the experience of being maybe one of the greatest recruiting classes ever in college football. I'm not saying it is or it's going to be, because they don't have the numbers. They probably won't have the number one class because they don't have 25 scholarships or whatever. They won't have the total points, but they'll have the highest ranking as far as rating of players. So I would think you only wait for a couple of positions. Defensive tackles, you got to wait there because you got to have the defensive tackles in this class. Maybe another defensive end. You've got to have a couple of offensive linemen, but you've got 2 great commits for 2014. And I've been checking on these players. These 2014 commits are probably going to be 5-star people. So if that's true, then you're starting off already 2014. And at that time, you will probably only have 15 scholarships. So if you want to be a Trojan and be a part of this exciting moment, why not commit? If I'm a parent, I'm going to call my kid in. I'm going to sit him down. I'm going to say, son, it's time. Or you might decide and you're going to be sorry for the rest of your life. So I think it's time now that a lot of these kids, Hutchinson, or a lot of these kids who want to be a Trojan, if they still want to be a Trojan, quit playing games, step up, make a decision, get rid of the ego portion of it, or you might not be able to go where you're going to college.
Yeah, it's going to be a fast and furious end as we go towards signing day. So it's going to be interesting to see and how many commits are left and all that. So we'll see. The summer could be filled up. The class could be filled up by the end of the summer.
Yeah, you could. And, you know, another thing you can do, you can always gray shirt kids. And that means they pay their first semester and they take 11 units, or they go to a junior college and take 11 units, and they can come in the next year early. So there's always that possibility, too. And a lot of people don't know what that means, but it means that you don't use your eligibility. Your clock hasn't started. You go and get started with your academic work at a junior college. You take 11 units where it doesn't cost you much money. You get 11 units ahead, and you come in February on next year's class.
Yeah.
So you know, if you get a lot of great ones and you can't turn them down, you just commit these people up early, and they commit by going. They don't sign with anybody. They go to a junior college, and we call it gray shirt, where they sit out, and they come in February. So that's always an alternative, too.
All right. Well, let's jump into these questions, Coach. And we had a couple from Melvin. Melvin loves writing questions in, so we're getting a ton from him. So thanks for all those, Melvin. First off, he says, why are we all of a sudden assuming McNeil or Morgan or Javaris Allen cannot carry the ball more than 25 or 30 times a game? He was talking about the running back depth. What is different now in football than the past to say the backs can't carry the load today? After all, Coach McKay said the ball doesn't weigh very much. So he's questioning the fact that people are talking about there's an issue with running back depth, but he wants to know, well, you only need a couple running backs because one guy can carry the load the whole game.
Well, you know, the only reason you talk about depth, really, I think a guy can carry the football, like you hear me always say, why take a guy on out of the game when they've got a rhythm and a back and an offensive line are working together well and they know what they see, and, you know, you run a play one time, it doesn't work, and you know why it doesn't work, so you come back and run it the next time and it works right because you know what you saw the play before as a running back and the offensive lineman, the timing that goes on. I think the number one thing you think of depth as far as having part of on a team is because of injury factors. If you happen to have an injury, you've got to have somebody else ready to go that's a capable player so that your defensive teams that play you fear your running back. So you've got to have capable running backs, so if you lose somebody, that they don't just shut it down and say, well, they're going to pass the football, they can't run to beat us. They don't have the home run threat. They don't have the short yardage back. So it comes down to the injury thing. But I think SC, if they treat their players right and they don't beat up their backs, if you remember, when they were carrying the ball, Marcus Allen, these backs at USC 20, 30 times a game, they never got hit in practice. They never got hit. They would go out and they would just run and get the soreness out, and all day Sunday and Monday they sat in the whirlpools and got their body back in shape. So, again, they'd be able to go the following Saturday. So, you know, you treat these backs a little bit different. Curtis McNeil is going to be a senior. You don't need to beat him up. He doesn't need to prove anything to anybody. He'll run with the offense out there in the first team to maintain his legs and conditioning, but you don't beat him up. You let some of the younger players come in and do the scrimmaging during the week, and during the game day, Curtis goes and carries the ball 25, 30 times a game or whatever's necessary to win. Remember, you got to carry the ball whatever it takes the number of times to win. And I think you can't win without a running game. I believe that 100%. You hear Motros who say that. And I think that if they start the season the way they finish the season and believing in a running game as far as part of their offense, they'll be in good shape.
Well, he has a follow-up to that, too. Who's the greatest Trojan running back of all time? The greatest in USC history. He rates OJ, then Charles White, then Ricky Bell.
Well, that's a tough one, and I don't really want to rank them because I run into these guys, okay? Now, I don't run into OJ, but I don't want to really rank them because I don't think I'm in a position to do that. Different times, different things, different seasons, but they're all very capable backs with great careers, Heisman trophies, and you name everything else, leading rusher in the country. But they were put in a position where they become and can get those stats to be great backs. SC's philosophy in the days that these players played was to run the football first and pass the football second. So these guys had that opportunity to become great backs. Not that they don't have, they weren't great backs. They really were. But they were put in a position to become great backs, Sam Cunningham and the rest of the crew of backs that were at USC. Today, it's more of a balanced type of offense. At least I hope it's a balanced type of offense. They are now starting to believe that at USC. For a while, it was a pass offense and a run occasionally. But at the end of the year last year, when they became a real force offensively, they started to run the football, and they became a very dangerous football team. So to rank those backs, I'd like someone else to do it for me, but I think they're all very capable, great football players.
Very politically correct answer there, Coach. That's cool, though. That's a real tough one anyway. Let's go to Steven. So he gave me this complicated background. It was about two pages worth of notes I can't really read here on the podcast. But what it breaks down to is he listened to a whole bunch of old shows, went on vacation to the Caribbean, I believe it was, and was listening to, he liked the Lanny Julius podcast, he liked all the other ones, but he said some of his favorite were last year after the Arizona State and Arizona games. USC ended up 4-1 after that stretch, but obviously lost to Arizona State, and it was a struggle with Arizona. And most of the feedback and the questions that were being sent in was the sky's falling, their question in Kiffin, their question in Monty Kiffin. I mean, there was all kinds of just everything's going crazy, and it's horrible. And he said, looking back on the 2011 season now, with the very slow start followed by the dominating finish, especially the exclamation mark shout out against UCLA, to what would you attribute this amazing turnaround? Was the turnaround genuine, or was the 2012 team overrated? That's from Steven.
Well, I really feel this. I don't feel they were a good football team at the beginning of the season, and it was a little bit of everything. You've heard me talk about this during the season when we did our podcast. I think they were sort of searching, trying to find an identity. I don't think they had an identity. Their timing was off. They didn't believe in running the football. They made some changes later on at the linebacker position that I think improved their team. They didn't play consistent. Play calling, I thought, was sort of picking at random certain plays. I couldn't figure it out how many times why they ran and passed the ball to Robert Woods so many times when they had other great receivers. And at the end of the year, they started to figure out they had other players that could perform, and you didn't have to just utilize one phase of your game, Robert Woods and Matt Barkley. You had to have confidence in your offensive line. You had to have confidence in your other receivers and your tight ends. They were all great athletes. You had to believe in running the football. Your defense became much quicker and aggressive and so on. And I thought the defense wasn't on the field the whole time or didn't have to make great plays always or put the offense in a position where the other team drove down and then the offense came in and had to go 90 yards to score. They didn't play with believing in themselves. They were always that question mark. They couldn't finish. They couldn't finish until they finally won that game at Notre Dame, where when you look at that game, they were very fortunate. Notre Dame's down there, and Hendricks fumbles the ball down there where Notre Dame's going to go ahead at Notre Dame last year. So at the first of the year, you know, they struggled against Minnesota. They didn't blow out Minnesota. They struggled against Syracuse. Utah, I think they had to block a kick or whatever happened to win that football game. So when you go back at the beginning of the year last year, they weren't a great football team because they were really second-guessing themselves and didn't have an identity. And at the end of the season, they slowed it down. They had an identity. They decided and found out they had other players who could play. They diversified their offense. They ran the football. And then they became a real football team after the Notre Dame game. And at the end of the year, and I'll say it positively, I've been negative a little bit at the beginning of this question, but at the end of the year, I would have matched USC against any other football team in the country on a neutral field, playing the way they played. Now, we'll never know, but that's exactly the way I feel.
All right, Coach. Well, thanks for that, and thanks for the question, Steven. Let's go to – we have a Vegas question. So I thought that this would be a good one for you, Coach. If you go to – there were some sports books that put out lines for college football for the whole year, and if you look at the USC game, they're favored in every single game. First part of the question is, how in the world can they post point spreads without ever seeing fall practice and before the first game is even played? And the second part is, do you think this kind of thing is good for USC football? I would think it can only provide incentive for other teams and perhaps give USC overconfidence before ever taking the field. What do you think about the early point spreads?
Well, I'll tell you, these guys are good. Part of my secret assignment last week is I met with a couple of these guys and went over the lines, okay? And I don't bet on college football, so let me just throw that out right now so people know that. But I like to have breakfast with some of them to find exactly how they come up with this and why or what. And I went through all, not just the numbers on USC, but a lot of the games during the year against different teams and figured how they came to those. These guys are pretty good. These guys are pretty good. And I think early lines are the best time you should be betting if you're better, because you get your best feel at that time, because you've seen more than these guys have seen, and you have a better feeling than they have until they get the season going. But USC should be a favorite in every game. They have Oregon at home. Stanford's rebuilding. SC's got 19 returning starters. Washington, yeah, they got a new defensive side of the staff. They're at Washington. They should go up there and be an angry football team. But what surprises me is how many points they're favored in a lot of these games. It's absolutely amazing. I don't have them in front of me. I wish I did. But how many points they're actually favored by? 15, 8, 9, 6. I think it's 6 against Oregon. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But that's what people believe of Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley coming back and the number of players coming back. If you look at most of the preseason publications, they've got him as the number one quarterback in America. There's no doubt about that. So he's got a lot on his plate this year. And if I may say, when I watch him in the fall practices or the summer practices that are going on at USC, I see a different kid working out, a little different attitude than what it was in the spring. He's much more serious about it. He's having fun. Now, don't get me wrong, and he still throws some picks. I see it on all of your videos and trying to force the ball in there. But, of course, you know, they're all playing the pass. They're not playing the run. And but it's crucial for the USC football team, for Matt Barkley, to have a great year. Can he have as good a year as what he had last year? I'm not sure. I'm not sure, because that was a pretty damn good football year for Matt. But it was a smart decision for him to come back, because he is now listed, as Andrew Luck was last year, as the number one guy. And if he does perform and SC does have a great season like they should, then he's going to make a lot of money, plus win a national championship or have a shot of going to a great bowl game like the Rose Bowl. So I think everything's in place, and now really what it comes down to is focusing on each game, not worrying about the numbers, but learning how to finish. Don't allow a team to be close with you if you're a better football team. Don't put the mental pressure or the stress on you as a coach and also as a player to pull something out in the last minutes. There are teams next year you should beat. Just beat those teams. It's a business trip. And there's teams out there next year that you're going to have to play your butt off to beat, because they want to beat you. But you know who those teams are, so you have to be ready to play. It doesn't do you any good to beat Hawaii, and I'm not saying you're going to beat Hawaii, but you beat Hawaii by 20 or 50 points, and you come back and struggle the next week at Syracuse. No, that doesn't make sense. Play consistent football. Don't just go out 1 week, but play at the same level. Play with the same belief. Learn how to finish. Learn how to make it where it isn't a close game. Utilize your special teams. And that's another thing that is really, I can't figure these preseason publications when they rank some of the units, and they don't have USC special teams as some of the top special teams in the country. I say, are you kidding me? I would take Negrete over any punter in the country, because he doesn't punt the ball every time into the end zone and have all these long yardages and stuff. See, that's what these people don't understand. They don't go to the games. They don't see how Hatari comes in and makes 15 to 17. They don't see how Negrete punts the ball and rolls out on the 4-yard line and they down it on the 2-yard line every single time. I don't believe last year he had a run back. I can't remember the stats now. But is there a stat for that? Do people talk about these little things like this? I don't know. And I don't think you're going to see that two-point conversion thing as often as we did early in the season last year, which really, as you notice at the end of the year, sort of settled down and they didn't do it as much. So, you know, those are my answers as far as the favorite being the favorite. You're going to be the favorite. You got 19 returning starters. You went 10-2, and people remember the last part of the year. You beat Oregon. Then you came back and beat UCLA 50-0. You think people forget that? And you got all these players coming back? No, these are human beings. That's why you're going to have all the prime time on television, and everybody in the nation is going to be watching USC this coming year. And that's why you're on the cover of every magazine. Matt Barkley's on the cover of almost every single magazine, and that's because of that.
No, I agree with you 100%, Coach, and we'll see. But, yeah, if there's a for the question, if there's a game out there or some sport or anything that they can make a line for, that's what Vegas does. I mean, that's how they make money. So they're going to do it. And
they're damn good at it, I want you to know. Yeah.
If they weren't good at it, they wouldn't keep doing it each and every week. So watch a game. Watch what the line is and see how close it comes. And it's pretty close a lot of the time. Yeah, but to people's chagrin most of the time. We have one last question, Coach. It's I got some of the unsung, unheralded guys, I guess, on the football team. And here's the question for you.
Hello, guys at the Peristyle. This is Bill from Chicago. And I have a couple of questions relating to the scout team. I'd like to know what players comprise the scout team. Are they the third and fourth string guys? Or are they the backups on the, you know, the second string guys? Just what players make up the scout team. And my second question regarding the scout team is, does the scout team run the SC defense and the SC offense so that they acquire knowledge of those schemes as they move up the ladder? Or do they run the plays and schemes of upcoming opponents? Well, that's my question. And, Ryan, I just wanted to say that, you know, your voice is very similar to Rich Eisen's. And I think if you watched a little Rich Eisen, you know, you'd slow down a little bit in your approach and you'd have a more I'm so glad you
And he it just kind of cut off there, so I'm not
Well, that's right. I thought I didn't know who I was working with, but, Rich, nice to meet you.
Hey,
every Sunday. And
NFL Network.
You do one hell of a job. You just have two different names, huh?
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for your question.
His voicemail just ended there, so I'm not sure.
Whatever. But good question. Yeah, here's the way, basically, depending on how your scout team and what your philosophy is. At USC this year, John Manoogian will be the quarterback of the scout team at USC. He came back specifically for that. He knows, he understands his role will not be really to play on the Saturday often. He's a very intelligent young kid. He will take films, I'm assuming, and he will watch the opponent the entire week before and also be a part of the game plan and quarterback meetings, not knowing that he'll not realizing, or he realizes he's not going to play, but he's going to prepare the defense for the coming week. Normally you have your third teamers run the scout team and all of your redshirt players. That's their role. That's part of becoming a varsity player. You make your team better the way you run your scout team. If your scout team has an attitude problem and doesn't run the play specifically the way they're supposed to be read, your defense is not getting any better and not seeing the look it's supposed to see. I used to go crazy as a coach when the scout team would just walk through things and fumble the ball and didn't care what they were doing. And if the coach in charge of that couldn't handle it, I'd get another coach. Because that is very, very important as far as preparing your offense and your defense for game day on Saturday. So it's very, very important that they see the look and they understand what their assignments are. And if you walk through those type of things, it never happens. So, yes, redshirt players, normally your third string players, preferred walk-on players, yes, they'll get reps during the regular practice schedule, an individual practice. When you have your individual routes and so on, they won't be down there practicing. But when you go to group, they'll go down there and they'll run their scout team plays and practice it and have it all ready for you so that when you come down to work offense or defense, they are prepared for it. Now, normally the offense will do it with offensive players and the defense will do it with defensive players. You don't use the same kids both ways. So the defense has to supply the players for their scout team. And the offense has to supply the players for their scout team. That way the same kids, they have a chance to get better at their position in individual groups, team meetings, and that portion of practice. But when it comes to the preparing the offense or the defense for the coming week, it's all business. And if it didn't run properly, then you get someone else to do it. And there's probably more hollering that goes on at the scout team and more praise that goes at the scout team as far as the success of the game the next Sunday or Monday when you meet with your team, because they're the guys that get you ready to play.
All right, Coach. Great stuff there. And you got to hats off to the scout team, because they really do whatever they can do to help prepare the main team for getting ready for those games. But thanks again, Coach, for coming on the show and bearing with me as I'm still rather exhausted from my trip to Atlanta, where it's 100 degrees on that field and walking around filming athletes for 24 hours in a row or whatever. But hopefully everything's going well with you, Coach. We appreciate you coming on the show. You're back from secret assignment, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Everything's great, buddy. And again, thank you very much for me being able to ask you a couple of questions. I enjoyed your answers. And for all of you out there, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Coach. Everyone else, hey, back in 30 seconds, we've got Dan Weber on the other on the other side of the break talking some USC football. So stay tuned for that.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back on the Peristyle Podcast. We got USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber joining us on the show. Dan, what's going on, sir? How are you?
Oh, not much. We feel like with all the recruiting stuff going on, it's amazing when you just look back 5 years. All the things that didn't exist, and now recruiting is a story that never ends. So you kind of sit out here and just watch it go on. It's sort of taken center stage much more of the time than I remembered even 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I think with the sanctions too, a lot of people are paying more attention to recruiting maybe for USC than we've seen in the past, and there's more national, media outlets, doing more stuff with recruiting. And, we hung out with Andy Staples from SI.com, who covers recruiting for them. And he, finds some interesting stories down there. We were, it was a long few days down there in Atlanta, but we got a ton of stuff coming up. We'll have Gerard Martinez on the Trojan Blast recruiting podcast probably on Wednesday. Once we catch our breath, we already have a lot of recruiting questions in there. So yeah, it's dominating right now, Dan. And the Rising Stars campus this week, so there's even more recruiting going on. The opening will be going up there, up in Oregon, in a couple weeks. So tons of recruiting stuff going on.
It's interesting that Andy was there because he's been. I think he's probably had the best take on the whole playoff situation if you read what he's written in Sports Illustrated, it looks like he might be locked in maybe a little bit more. I don't know that anybody knows, absolutely, but between, the last 2 weeks and then I guess starting tomorrow in Washington, D.C. So Andy broke away, came down to Atlanta, and I guess he's back probably going to be in D.C. tomorrow.
Yeah, he I had dinner with him, and really nice guy. If you definitely check out his stuff, it's I think it's Andy_Staples at Twitter. Big foodie. We had he took us to a great barbecue place down there in Atlanta. He knows all kinds of barbecue places all around the South.
Yeah, we'll forgive the fact that he's a Gainesville University of Florida guy.
Yeah, he played offensive line at the University of Florida as a walk-on. And I don't know.
Had to walk on. I think those are the years when they had like 900 walk ons. Like they were trying to beat out Nebraska. I still remember they showed up at Kentucky one year and they had a long punter, a short punter, a long field goal kicker, and a short field goal kicker. And we were trying to figure out how the heck are they doing this? They had even then, they had figured out some ways around the numbers situation. Yeah. They were, other than Nebraska, I always thought Florida was more creative in some of the things they were doing, but that would have been probably about the time that they really did. And obviously, a lot of high school football in Florida and a lot of chance to get kids to walk on. But, yeah, Andy's seen it from the inside, I think, and a little bit of an SEC perspective. You kind of have to kind of tweak Andy a little bit to maybe get him to see things from the West Coast. And I guess now that his buddy, Stuart Mandel, has moved to Palo Alto, the other SI guy, he's had a little bit of a West Coast reawakening, I think. That's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah, he certainly has. And I talked to Andy about that. He's actually he was going to fly back to Gainesville, but only be home for like 12 hours and then fly to D.C. But he ended up staying in Atlanta last night because they had that tropical storm. So he's flying right to D.C. this morning or on Monday morning. And he talked to me about he got some of that information, and if you definitely check out his column, he had a lot of the breaking stuff of what was going on with the playoff, like a rotating, 12-year deal and a rotating thing between, I think it was six bowls, and they're trying to set it up so like the SEC and Big 12 bowl would match up.
I sent that one out to people who. And I said, I think this has the most insight, his last one. I thought he had the most insight. Maybe we ought to link to that on the Peristyle.
Yeah, we'll link to it on the Peristyle for people to check it out. I can tweet it out. I was just so busy, I didn't even get a chance to read it. But I was talking to him about it. He was just telling me what was in the story. So that was kind of good. But
I've been getting a lot of emails, what do you think? What do you think? And I finally said, I think Andy has the best take here. This seems to be probably... is the most things I said. I don't think everything's absolutely not everything is decided, but if you want to have a look at kind of the direction this is going, I think Andy probably had all the little details and the possibilities. I do think they're going to leave some things open for the presidents, like exactly how the bowls are going to work in. I don't think they've even figured it out completely. I think the thing with the bowls that really is throwing them off is, do you ask the fan bases to make two trips? And if you do, to the semifinals, let's say they got to come to the Rose Bowl from wherever for the semifinals, then they've got to go to, say, if they're playing it at, Jerry Jones's place, and Dallas, Fort Worth, do you ask them to go 2 weeks in a row? The thing about that, they do it in basketball. I mean, those people, very often the top seeds get to play at home the first week, or at home in their home state. But then, they're traveling, 2 weeks in a row to go to the regionals and then the Final Four, and they don't think of that as such a big deal for basketball. But I know they've been talking about how, rather than waiting – for example, to see if there's a Pac-12 or a Big Ten team in the Final Four and then letting them play at the Rose Bowl, do they have to predetermine those sites a year in advance to give people – and that, to me, it seems to be the one area where, it would be fine with me if they just said, whenever there's a Pac-12 or Big Ten team in the Final Four, they automatically play that game at the Rose Bowl. Now, obviously, you wouldn't know that until they select, let's say, a couple of weeks before. But, what the heck? That's the way it is now.
Yeah. Well, we had a question, actually. Mark in La Quinta wrote in, and I know there was a lot of people talking about your columns on the playoff stuff. And Mark said, I think you realize that the train has left the station and all of your suggestions will fall on deaf ears. What I would like is for USC football to promote fair criteria upon which the committee should determine the four participants. And he suggests a few things, talking about strength of schedule and getting dinged if you schedule a game against BCS schools, credit for winning your conference, using the polls, having each FBS conference have one representative on the committee and rotating a representative for each of the four independent FBS schools. The representatives are disallowed from voting for their own schools and He thinks that would be a lot more fair. Also have it be transparent so the votes are all public. And each representative should submit teams 1 to 6 and points assigned for for each team, and the top four teams would make the playoffs. So, I mean, there's a lot of different suggestions out there, but those were some that Mark had.
I think everything that Mark just suggested, I think they may adopt, you know, basically adopt them and adapt them actually a little bit. But the only question, and this is what I think I really, the point I was trying to make is I didn't want them to, you know, determine those things too soon. I would have liked to have seen the Pac-12 and the Big Ten hold off a little bit until they get those really, really clarified in ways in which maybe they can, you know, actually go through a selection committee, pick a selection committee, pick the criteria, and see how they really would apply them. Because you can say these are the criteria, these are the people on it, but until you get them actually doing those things and making those selections, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, let's face it, a lot of those things make sense for the people, for example, voting in the AP poll or voting in the coaches poll. You know, yeah, you should take into consideration strength of schedule and the number of, you know, gimme games that you have at home and the number of teams that play 8 home games and the number of teams that don't play the good teams in their own conference and the other division and all those kinds of things. But, you know, they don't consider those things enough. They don't think, for example, you know, Oregon, obviously, because they chose to play LSU in what was, in effect, a road game at first of the year. Had that game been played, for example, at the end of the year in Eugene, who do you think would have won, you know? I mean, I think and yet Oregon, you know, got penalized for that. So you can have all the criteria you want, and you can have all the, you know, selection committee people that you think this is, you know, everybody is represented. And yet, you know, I think, as we've seen, having a Pac-12 person on there, does that represent USC? I'm not sure. My latest take on this whole thing has been maybe USC needs to go back to where the Pac-12 has been telling USC to go and where USC used to be in the old days, which is pretty much on its own, where USC represents USC. And you do that by winning football games and recruiting really good players and putting yourself in a place where nobody can take anything away from you. And you don't worry about the Pac-12 representing you or that you can get together with the Big Ten and hold out and, you know, for something for the Rose Bowl and what have you. So I'm kind of saying that USC maybe ought to go more to that place where Notre Dame wishes it was. If you're kind of out there on your own, you win football games, you get really good players, and then you get a chance to play some really good people at the end of the year and see how good you are. Because I'm not convinced that just little things like looking at that Pac-12 trailer that they proudly produced for the Pac-12 Network's introduction featuring Oregon football and Andrew Luck. And, oh, yeah, maybe by the end we'll get a couple of USC, you know, shots thrown in there. But, you know, it's just something that probably USC can't hang its hat on to the league with which it gladly shares equally all the big bucks that USC brings in through television and gives them away to Washington State and Oregon State and all those other schools. So my thought process is changing. Don't worry about the Pac-12. I may have probably given Larry Scott a little more credit than maybe his performance so far in this. It's getting really panned, actually, by people like Andy Staples, who was – thought the Pac-12 and the Big Ten really didn't get it in terms of these negotiations. Now, maybe there's a secret plan that we don't know about. But so far, I'm thinking USC, go it alone, get yourself into the Final Four every year, and take care of business is the way to go.
Makes sense. Well, let's talk about the team a little bit. I did miss, because I was in Atlanta, I did miss Friday's workout. We have a couple questions on the team. We can probably get your thoughts, Dan, on
okay.
What was going on in Friday's workout. First one is from Jay. He wants to know, how is Max Wittick's arm compared to Matt Barkley?
Well, Max throws effortlessly. He's gotten bigger and stronger, no question about it. He looks more like Carson Palmer. I doubt that we're ever going to see anybody throw with the effortless power that Carson threw. But getting more like that, I mean, you know, his issue is more harnessing that arm. I mean, it's, you know, that the ball can sail on him. He really can, he was a kid, I think, who hadn't, you know, physically matured, you know, quite as much. And now you see a bigger arm, bigger shoulder, you know, much a more defined looking Max Wittick, who always had a strong arm, but now he's got a really strong arm. But the ability to get it exactly where he wants, exactly on time, is something to work on. Which is why I kind of maybe took a little exception with people who said Jesse Scroggins had the strongest arm on the team, and I would have probably not said that with looking at Max. And Matt Barkley is interesting. He makes all the throws. He throws the ball lots of different ways. And he certainly the other day, threw a couple of bombs and I just think he can make all the throws. And I think it's easy to, for people to look at one throw or look at another throw and say, gee, how strong is his arm? I think his arm is as strong as it, exactly as strong as it has to be. And I think that's probably the most overrated quality in terms of a quarterback. As long as you can make every throw that you have to make, that's all you need to do. So it's not like, who threw the ball faster, Sandy Koufax or Don Drysdale, It didn't all make that much difference. It was, it's how you, where you threw it and when you threw it and all of that kind of thing. But he's got a really strong arm.
Okay.
Max does, yes.
Yeah. And I think they both have stronger arms than Cody.
Cody doesn't try to throw the ball hard because Cody throws it, throws a different kind of a ball. Cody throws more of a Drew Brees type ball. If you had to rate catchability, who throws the most catchable ball? Cody throws the most catchable ball. The ball that, with the nose up a little bit maybe again, he probably holds on to it longer. He has the ability to move in the pocket, move out of the pocket, throw on the run accurately, that kind of thing. You're measuring different things when you talk about that strong arm. I mean, what you want is that they can all make all the throws that you need them to make in your offense, and they always would talk about with the NFL guys that can they make that deep out, throw that deep out ball. I think all of them can. I think when Max throws it, it sometimes sails on him because he really throws it. I mean, he just absolutely drills it. They're really asking them to make more difficult throws, which I think is great. I think they were probably, obviously, at the start of last year, they were, overly conservative, overly careful, and cautious, and it probably cost them a little bit. But as the, season went on, they realized, we really need to attack, and it became more of a allowing them to throw the kind of throws that Mark Sanchez always wanted to throw, that dart where you throw it, through people. And they're doing a lot more of that in the workouts, a lot more of where they're really requiring or asking the quarterback to throw a ball in between people and really, really on the money and getting it there quickly. And you're seeing more of that. For sure.
Well, that was a question from Jay on the quarterbacks. We have a question from Anthony out of Salinas, California, on the wide receivers. He goes, what are the wide receivers' 40 times? I know they're fast, but how fast are these guys?
Good question. I would say you're talking three guys, probably 4-4 and below. So putting George Farmer closest, you know, to 4-3. And then I'm not sure who I'd pick. Obviously, I'd take Robert. If you extended it more than 40 yards, Robert is probably going to win against all three of them. But then if you put Marquise in there, I think the track work this spring and, you know, the ability to accelerate on that long jump and the fact that he ran in the, you know, 4x100 relays a couple of times, I think his 40 time has got to be, you know, right around, you know, 4-4. So I would say they probably have, you know, the top three guys would be 4-4 or less. Which is, that's about as good as you're going to get. You know, I don't think anybody, not sure anybody's got three guys with that much talent, also with that much speed. And then I would say Flournoy and Victor Blackwell, probably a little above that, you know, in the four, you know, whether Blackwell can get under 4-5, I'm not absolutely certain. I would say Flournoy could. And then it'd be interesting to see Nelson Aguilar. I would like to see that. And, you know, you get times on kids, but you really need to see them running on their own and make your own judgments. And whether they're going to push that 40 time and take the chance of, you know, a kid pulling a hamstring or something like that, I'm not so sure about that. But they're plenty fast, I would think, on this group. And it'd be interesting to see where Aguilar fits in. Does he fit in with the top three? Has he got that kind of speed? And sometimes, you know, with the younger kids and that, you really don't know until you see them and you get them here and just see exactly where they fit.
We got to see some of these guys. Like I mentioned before, Friday, I wasn't out there. Anything interesting? Any kind of updates you want to share with the podcast audience of what happened Friday morning when the team was out there?
Friday was actually kind of a quick, a lot of what they're doing is refreshing. You know, they're not reinventing the wheel. You know, a lot of stuff is they're going over things. You know, I think the second half of last season, you saw what you're going to see, you know, this coming year. They figured out where they needed to go. And an awful lot of what they're doing is just they're going through the, you know, motions and going over things. I think you're seeing a pretty good amount of Soma Vanuku. For those who think, will they keep a fullback in there because of all the tight ends and that? They're certainly running a lot of stuff that involves the fullbacks. Trying to think, Marquise was not there. Marquise had to leave early, and so did Well, and Robert was more, you know, was again the player coach role. So you didn't get a chance to see, you know, as much of those guys. One of the things you are seeing is, it certainly looks like they're going to have a great deal of depth in the secondary, and I think that secondary depth is really going to be a factor. I think they're going to be able to do the rotation that Lane really wants to be able to do, and they really like the idea how much more Oregon got out of maybe not the greatest personnel, but being able to rotate 25 guys on defense. And I know they really, really want to be able to do that. And they've got a lot of, you know, guys who've played a lot of football, who've got a lot of, you know, athletic ability in that secondary. The other thing you notice a lot is, the linebackers can run. That first group of linebackers, when you've got Deion Bailey and Lamar Dawson and Hayes Pillard in there together, they really look like, you know, for a young group, I mean, basically you're talking three sophomores, they look like they've been together for a long time, and athletically they can really run to the football. I mean, they can really so there are days when you end up spending you know, more time, you know, watching the defense. If, you know, when they're all there, they make life pretty tough. And then just throwing in a kid like Ryan Dillard, he just every session he does something really impressive. I mean, he just they don't get a lot of walk-ons, but what a good, you know, what a break, you know, he is to have that kid walk in into the program. Just a, you know, a real talent and a great, you know, great young man, and they're very lucky to have him. So he's kind of a bonus on top of, you know, what they thought was going to happen. Gerald Bowman showed up. He's obviously trying to, you know, he does line up, he lines up and, you know, asking a lot of questions and that. So he's getting a chance to, you know, get acclimated. And then Josh Shaw is in there all the time. And, you know, you see a couple of really big athletic looking guys in the secondary. Nickell Roby just, you know, is everywhere. And, you know, obviously this may be his last season, but it looks like he really wants to make it, you know, make it worthwhile. So I think you saw more. The defense, you know, was able to take, without, I guess, also both tailbacks. So Buck Allen got to play a lot on Friday. Both tailbacks ahead of him had to leave early because they went longer with the conditioning and the weightlifting. So it was kind of a different look on Friday. The other thing you notice is the quarterbacks really know what they're doing, all three of them. You know, it's not like with Kessler and Wittig that they're learning now. You know, they've had a spring. They've had actually two springs and one fall. So they've been around plenty enough so that all three quarterbacks, it's just a different feel about the quarterback spot.
All right. And then we got one last question, Dan. Thanks for the update there on Friday. I definitely had to read your update from Atlanta to see what was going on there. I'm usually at all those, but couldn't do it on Friday. And then here's one last question for you. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan, it's Miguel. Got a question for Dan Weber. With the recent transfer of Jesse Scroggins, I know that the scholarship that he freed up cannot be replaced by a high school commitment, but I wasn't sure if you guys have talked about it before, but can a transfer, like, replace him on the scholarship, for a scholarship? Thank you very much, and fight on.
Yeah, I mean, they have the, well, technically all the scholarships are renewable year to year, but, you know, the walk-on guys who have earned scholarships in the past and things like that, I mean, they're really close to that 75 number, and so it's one of those things where, you know, you don't want to start allocating them to this person or that person, but definitely that scholarship will go to someone, and someone that's out there practicing now. I mean, no question. I don't see it, you know, going to anybody other than one of the guys that's out there now. But yes, that's kind of a benefit. I think it's one of those things where it benefited everybody. I think it benefits Jesse to go to El Camino and get a chance to play after 2 years of really not getting to play. He needs to play. I agree that the junior college move for him was better because it'll give him a chance to play as opposed to going to a Division I program where he wouldn't have had any spring practice and would have, you know, had laid off basically 2 years. So I think that's a good move for him, and it's a good move for USC because it frees up a scholarship, and the fact that Jesse had gotten his grades up, he leaves in good standing, which helps USC's APR, you know, score. So in every way, that probably works out well. But they'll definitely, Miguel, they'll definitely use that scholarship.
Yeah, and it's essentially what it's not. He doesn't free up an initial counter scholarship, so it doesn't this on February. In February, USC can't sign 19 guys instead of 18. It doesn't work that way. But it's the overall number, the scholarship number. So we had a count of 76. Before Scroggins transferred out, now it's down to 75. So essentially, you know, you can't really say it goes to this guy. They're not bringing in another transfer. If they brought in someone new, you know, they would count towards that 75 limit. It would now be at 76. So it does free up one of those overall scholarships. And for our count, Dan, it looks like USC's right at the limit, right at 75. And I think that's exactly where Lane Kiffin wanted to be. you know, heading into the season and heading into the next recruiting class.
Yeah, that would be ideal. If that's the way it can stay, and then ideally, and maybe in two more years, some of these kids that are walking on, you know, can be first in line, you know, to get those 75 scholarships. Although, you know, if they for some reason drop below 75 a little bit, you know, maybe next year even. You know, one of the walk-on kids will earn himself a scholarship. So I think people at first thought that wouldn't possibly happen with the number dropping to 75, but it still might, where a walk-on, a really deserving walk-on, could end up with a scholarship. But we'll see. I mean, there's always a chance that somebody might have a medical issue where they're going to have to retire, where they can stay on scholarship, but they don't count as a scholarship, too. And so... you know, the number is going to be close, and they have to have it down to the 75 that are going to be on the list by the, I guess, July, last day in July is the limit. So they've got some time before making those final, you know, distinctions as to who are the 75 this year.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing all your insights to USC football. We'll look forward to being out there with you tomorrow morning as USC yep. gets back to their summer workouts. But thanks again, Dan, and we'll talk to you soon.
That's the bright and early day. You're back on Atlanta time tomorrow. they start at 6 on Tuesday. So.
Woo! Early, early stuff. All right. Well, okay. Thanks again, Dan. We appreciate it. And everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We really appreciate you checking out our show and talking about the USC Trojans. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.